From Hollywood, we present Lou Ayres in The Eternal Light.
I have made my heart into a rock. Yet I know it is written that the God of Jacob will turn the rock into a pool, the flint into a fountain of waters.
The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations make free time available to present The Eternal Light in a special series coming to you from Hollywood under the auspices of the West Coast branch of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our story today features Lou Ayres in Morton Wishengrad's The Physician of Birkenau, a drama dedicated to the United Jewish Appeal, now in its campaign for 1948.
My name is Anatole Miller. I'm a doctor. If I'm alive today, it's because I inoculated myself against the infections of hatred. There's an error people make. They think it began in Germany. It began before. And for me, it began in Poland. In Poland in 1927, I saw them force the Jewish shops to close. In Poland in 1928, I saw a Jewish mother offer her baby for adoption in return for milk and bread. No, it did not begin in Germany. It was not in Germany that I taught myself to be strong against cruelty, to build my defenses against the terror. In Poland in 1936, it began for me. I was a student in the medical college of Lemberg. I remember how it began.
Gentlemen, your indulgence for a moment.
He was a professor of pathology, a distinguished scientist.
Student Semenek has asked permission to read an announcement.
Student Semenek was not an ordinary medical student. He was an honor student.
Kindly give him your undivided attention. Thank you. Whenever you are ready, Semenek.
At 9 o'clock last evening, there was a special meeting of the Board of Governors of the Student Union. At this meeting, the following resolution was passed by unanimous vote. It is recommended that henceforth all students of the Jewish faith be requested to sit on the left-hand side of each lecture hall or classroom, and further, that they be requested to occupy only the rear benches. Any questions?
Student Semenek, I have a question.
I'm not surprised. What's the question, Miller?
Suppose Jewish students ignore this request.
Miller, we have formed committees to enforce segregation. Does that answer your question?
Professor, may I be permitted to ask you a question?
What is it, Miller?
Sir, have you an opinion on this resolution?
I am a professor of pathology. I am interested only in the science of pathology.
Sir, yesterday in your lecture, you discussed the discovery of the migration of the white blood corpuscles in time of infection.
Well?
You call the discovery a great revolution in the science of pathology.
Miller, what is your point? We don't have all day.
I thought you would see the point, sir. The discovery was made by Julius Kuhnheim. You also made a reference to Wasserman and Ehrlich. They were also Jews. Do you recommend, sir, that I take them with me to the ghetto bench on the left-hand side of the hall?
Miller, I must repeat, I am interested only in the science of pathology.
I understand, Professor.
Where do you think you're going, Miller?
To my seat.
Your seat is now on the left-hand side.
You're mistaken. This is my seat.
Zimsky, Kolodin, and you, Sinzansky, are appointed a committee to see student Anatole Miller after the lecture. My apologies, Professor, for taking so much time.
Not at all, Semenek. Gentlemen, let us begin today's lecture in pathology.
I was one of 18 Jewish students who was beaten on that first day. Levy in anatomy 2 suffered a broken arm. Horowitz in gynecology received a ruptured spleen. Eisenberg in pediatrics was kicked unconscious. The rest of us were luckier. On the second day, the rest of us returned to classes armed with canes and umbrellas. There was a fight. Semenek and I were taken before the police magistrate, where the case against Semenek was dismissed. The case against me wasn't dismissed.
Student Anatole Miller, this court finds you guilty of provoking a riot.
I was defending myself.
I sentence you to 5 days in the city penitentiary.
But I have a right to defend myself when I am attacked.
You have no right to take the law into your own hands. You should have gone to the police and asked for protection.
Student Levy went to the police.
Yes, Your Honor. I spoke to the lieutenant.
You're Student Levy?
Yes, Your Honor.
What did you tell the police lieutenant?
I told him what had happened in the university. I told him that there was going to be trouble.
And the police lieutenant, what did he say?
He called me a name. Then he said, come back when the trouble begins. How can I protect you against something that hasn't begun? That's what he said.
Quite right. Student Levy, you're not fooling us for a single minute.
But, Your Honor,
I... Silence! Student Levy, the court sentences you to 5 days in the city penitentiary for creating a disturbance. Officer, remove the prisoners.
In the winter of 1936, my attendance in the medical college was irregular, owing to frequent visits to the city penitentiary. At the beginning of 1937, I was called to the office of the dean.
Miller, the candidate for the diploma of Doctor of Medicine is required to be more than a good student.
Yes, sir.
I would say also that he is required to possess certain qualities of character. A physician must be a gentleman. I regret to say that you are not a gentleman.
And Semenek is a gentleman. Dean, I believe that when one gentleman attacks a second gentleman, it is considered quite gentlemanly to resist.
Careful, Miller. I will not tolerate disrespectful language.
I'm not being disrespectful, sir. I'm defending my life. The policy of segregation is illegal. I shall study. I shall take my examinations. I shall obey the regulations of the college. But, sir, I reserve the right to protest any illegal attack.
Miller, you are making an error. This is Poland. You can't fight Poland.
He was a temperate man. I was not expelled. In 1937, educational hoodlumism received the sanction of law. The dean called me to his office.
Miller, this afternoon, Minister of Education Svetoslavsky sent a telegram to all school supervisors. I'll read it. Jewish students in all classrooms shall be confined to segregated benches. This decree has the full force of law. It's all, Miller. I thought you would want to know.
All over Poland that afternoon, in the universities, in the colleges, in the secondary schools, in the primary schools, and in the kindergartens, there were meetings of Jewish students.
The motion you are asked to vote on is this. Resolved, that we shall refuse to sit in the ghetto benches. Beginning tomorrow, we shall stand for all our classes.
I stood. For the next 2 years, I stood. While Poland sat, a minority stood. I had a little niece. Her name was Sophie. She was 7 years old, and she was in the second year of grammar school. Sophie also stood. The science of medicine teaches that when the body is invaded by infection, the white blood cells defend against the enemy. It is a discipline. But if the blood cells defend against bacteria, the brain cells must defend against the evil of man. And the resistance against the evil of man is built up in the brain by disbelief. By disbelief in his words of humanity. By disbelief in the pledges of his governments. It's a discipline necessary for the preservation of life. On the day of Yom Kippur, 1939, in the Polish city of Lemberg, the service in the synagogue where I worshipped was brief. We kept the day in a fast. We kept it in repentance and in holiness. But our hands were engaged in the digging of trenches for the preservation of life.
Down tools for a minute. It's time to sound the ram's horn.
It was the cantor who sounded the ram's horn at the end of the Day of Atonement. He made his call near the field where the children's battalions were drilling. One ram's horn of repentance. One thin, archaic sound against the modern roar of the tanks. Against immorality and hatred. Do you hear the sound? No. Not even now. Who can hear a ram's horn in a world like this? I fought with the guerrillas. And after the collapse of the resistance, I was taken prisoner. I was a special prisoner. I was a doctor. I had just received my medical diploma.
My name is Dr. Koenig. Miller, you understand why you have been permitted to live?
Because my services may be useful.
Exactly. You will do what is required. You will perform without question, without delay, with efficiency.
Yes, Dr. Koenig. What are my duties?
There is a new drug which will be given to you. Familiarize yourself with its properties.
After I have become familiar with its properties, Dr. Koenig?
In Women's Barracks V3 at Birkenau are 75 pregnant women. You will inject the drug into the hip.
For what purpose, Dr. Koenig?
The purpose is not your concern, Miller. But since you ask, I shall tell you. To induce premature birth.
Oh, assign me to something else. Anything, I'll clean latrines.
You will inject into the hip. If for no other reason than that you save the parents' lives. Each live birth is now punishable by the immediate execution of the mother and the father.
Yes, Dr. Koenig.
That's all, Dr. Miller.
If you don't already know what took place between then and now, you will never know. If you don't already believe, you will never believe. It's a story that begins with a joke in a newspaper and ends in a gas chamber. If you don't know it already, you will never know it. There is no merit in survival. The meritorious do not always live. There is likewise no merit in death. For evil men also die. Survival is a mathematical formula compounded by chance. And the greater chance belongs to him who will see pain and abide it. Who will know terror and endure it. Who will hear the promises of men and never believe. And after VE Day, I continued to survive because I disbelieved the pledges of my liberators.
You are liberated. Those of you born in Poland may now return to a free Poland.
There was a survivor of Birkenau, a woman. I knew her well. She retained a sentimental belief in kindness. She returned to her Polish birthplace, the city of Kielce. She was killed in a pogrom.
Those of you who choose to remain here will be assisted to begin a new life.
There was another survivor of Birkenau, a man. He began to stand in a Polish classroom in 1936... For 4 years more, he was made to stand in a concentration camp. It is April 1948. He still stands in a camp for displaced persons. 12 years of standing.
For those of you who choose to go to other countries, be assured that we shall do everything to expedite your emigration.
I choose to emigrate.
Doctor, we have your application on file. But please do not be impatient. These things take time.
It takes less time to go than to wait. Going enforces no beliefs. You stand in your own shoes, you walk with your own feet, you travel your own way down through Middle Europe toward the sea, where there are fishing boats and seamen who know the currents that flow toward Palestine. There were some vessels that got through. These were not the vessels entrusted to the kindness of the Mediterranean patrols. These were vessels that preferred moon over sun and darkness over light. It was the sound of the surf. The sound of the Mediterranean surf 1 year ago, 1937 to 1947. 10 years from the ominous silence in a classroom in pathology to the sound of the waves breaking upon a beach near Haifa.
All clear, everyone. Single file, everyone. And softly, very softly.
Softly we went out from the sea, and softly we went up on the way toward Jerusalem. I had come unto Zion, but very little had changed, for we came upon a familiar sight.
Barbed wire. We'll go around.
I had trained myself to go around with no trouble at all. We went a little way and we came upon a familiar sound.
Cover. Cover. Were those the guns of our patrol?
No, not those guns. No, those guns came by camel across the border. They're German guns.
Then let me shoot back. I have a revolver.
Don't return the fire. You'll be arrested.
But a man has a right to defend himself, doesn't he?
Throw the revolver away. You'll be arrested for illegal possession of firearms.
Barbed wire, the volley of German guns, the illegality of the defense of life, familiar things, familiar sounds, familiar customs, was almost good. Was almost like being home. In order to go to Jerusalem, you must go up. And up from Jerusalem, there is a university where no students stand. There is also a hospital where a doctor may enter and never be required to make an injection into a hip. Last year, I, Anatole Miller, M.D., the University of Lemberg, walked up the steps of Hadassah Hospital and no sentry barred the way. I walked through the corridors, I touched my fingers against clean walls, I heard the conversation of nurses, I smelled the sweet, cloying smells of disinfectant, and then I went to a door marked Medical Director. I stood there. I'd come as far as I could go myself. I was powerless to go farther.
Why don't you knock? It's customary.
It's nothing. Nothing at all, nurse.
Well, if you don't like to knock, just open the door and go in.
I don't have an appointment.
That's easy. See? No difficulty at all.
You wish to see me, nurse?
No, I don't, Dr. Fiedler. But I believe there's someone here who would like an interview with the medical director.
It was not like barbed wire. For 10 years, I had become accustomed solely to barbed wire.
Dr. Miller, after your graduation, in what civilian hospitals were you employed?
None.
Tell me, have you ever been inside a civilian hospital?
I'm a doctor.
Please trust us, Dr. Miller. Hold nothing back. We're anxious to help you. Palestine needs trained technicians.
Outside in the corridor, I saw a paper with a word printed on it.
Penicillin. That's what I mean, Dr. Miller. Things have happened in medicine these 10 years. Now, relax, look around, sit in the library and look at the medical journals. Then when you're rested, come back. We'll retrain you, Dr. Miller.
You will eat here, Dr. Miller, with the other physicians. If there is anything you want, just let us know.
Penicillium notatum was cultured and subcultured by Fleming, Florey, Chain, and several others in England. Here in Jerusalem, we believe that some small contributions.
Please don't get up, gentlemen. Dr. Fiedler has asked me to bring Dr. Anatole Miller to the refresher seminar in pathology. This is Dr. Miller.
Glad to have you, Doctor. Won't you have a seat?
Dr. Miller, I ask you again, please don't be embarrassed. Try these shoes on.
My shoes can last a little longer, Dr. Fiedler.
You must not be stubborn, Dr. Miller. Here, I think these shoes are your size. Try them. Come, Miller.
When I was a boy in Lemberg, I heard someone say, it's better to die than to be a beggar.
Oh, but you're not begging. These shoes are provided by the United Jewish Appeal. And this suit, all of this. Dr. Miller, you're getting nobody's cast-off clothes. It isn't a matter of charity. Jews are helping Jews. Now, I'll leave you alone, Doctor. Try these clothes on. Please.
For 10 years, I had known only adversity. For 10 years, I had experienced nothing but the cold fire of terror and hatred. Now, upon a hill in Jerusalem, there was kindness. I had no defenses against kindness. I had no resistance against a door opening, against a hand on my arm. They had taken away my strength. They had struck me down.
Nurse, where was he found?
In the corridor outside his room.
How long was he unconscious?
Not more than 10 minutes. Dr. Katzman gave digitalis.
What's his pulse now?
60, but much stronger, Dr. Fiedler.
Thank you, nurse. I'll stay with the patient.
Yes, Dr. Fiedler.
Hello, Dr. Miller.
I've had a heart attack.
Well, it happens. That Dr. Katzman, who gave you digitalis, had a nervous breakdown after Auschwitz. You're entitled to a heart attack.
You know, you should have been harsh to me.
Perhaps you're right.
Kindness should come gradually. It came suddenly, all at once.
I think you shouldn't talk. Listen to me for a moment, Dr. Miller. We are going to retrain you.
But I...
You'll get well. Why, there's a man here on our staff who broke down also. He got better. Last year, he made an important contribution in the science of dermatology. Next year, a medical college is going to be started here. There'll be no ghetto benches in this college. Neither for Jews, nor for Christians, nor for Muslims. We'll want you, Miller. We'll want you for the clinics. We'll want you for the college.
What can I teach them?
Teach them what you've been. That's also a part of medicine. You're going to get well, Doctor. Now go to sleep.
It is April 1948. I am in Jerusalem. My name is Anatole Miller, M.D. Later this year, I shall be asked to lecture in the medical college. I have nothing to teach. I'm a beginner. But they are kind people, and their purpose is occupational therapy. Very well, I shall humor them. For a patient must always humor his physician and must honor him. Therefore, in my lecture, I shall propose one of two prescriptions for the preservation of life. Either to train for disbelief and to lie prone without movement, or else to believe once again in the morality of governments, the pledges of men. I don't know which prescription it will be. Perhaps you will tell me.
And now we present Julius Fliegelman, chairman of the 1948 campaign of the United Jewish Welfare Fund of the Los Angeles Jewish Community Council. Mr. Fliegelman.
The unhappy survivors of oppression in Europe want to believe in the future. They want to have faith in the world and in justice. I know the Dr. Millers and the many other refugees who are still in displaced persons camps in Europe. And those who have found a home in Palestine. Only 6 weeks ago, I had the privilege of being part of a delegation of the United Jewish Appeal, which visited Europe and Palestine. The 250,000 homeless Jews who are living in the DP camps of Central Europe and Cyprus have faith that the free world will not let them down. They have faith that we will help them reach a place of freedom where they will be able to build a new life, whether it be Palestine, the United States, or other friendly lands. They are determined never to be refugees again. There is a great misery in many parts of Europe, but the remarkable work of the Joint Distribution Committee is sustaining the lives of more than 1 million Jews and preparing them for a new future. There is danger and crisis in Palestine, but the extraordinary program of the United Palestine Appeal is making possible greatly increased immigration and settlement and providing for the defense of the 700,000 men, women, and children in the Jewish homeland. Here in the United States, all of us are familiar with the notable program that is being carried on in behalf of the adjustment of refugees by the United Service for New Americans. I am happy to announce that this broadcast officially inaugurates the observance of the United Jewish Appeal Freedom Month during the month of April. Freedom Month will mark the beginning of the National United Jewish Appeal campaign. This campaign is dedicated to assuring freedom from want, freedom from fear, and freedom from homelessness to the 1,500,000 Jews who survived the persecutions of Hitler. It is significant that the Freedom Month should be observed this month, for it also commemorates the deliverance from bondage in ancient Egypt of the children of Israel. In seeking to bring freedom from misery and suffering, the United Jewish Appeal is doing a humanitarian job of historic proportions. This is truly a contribution to freedom and peace for all mankind.
Thank you, Mr. Fliegelman.
Eternal Light dramatization today, The Physician of Birkenau, was written by Morton Wishengrad. This program came from Hollywood and featured Lou Ayres. The music was composed by Morris Mamorski and conducted by Henry Russell. The program was directed by Andrew C. Love. Next week, The Eternal Light will feature Joseph Cotton in The Man Who Remembered Lincoln. Free time to present The Eternal Light is made available by the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations. The program appears under the auspices of the West Coast branch of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. If you have any comments or inquiries about today's broadcast, please write to The Eternal Light, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.